Taco Palenque fans, we have something special for you. Try the Casero Taco now for only $2.75 Monday through Thursday. Flavor packed with premium sirloin rice and refried beans. Only at Taco Palenque. At participating locations for limited time, not valid for delivery. Other restrictions may apply.
From a highly secure network of top secret locations across the state of Texas, this is the Spurs Insider brought to you by Taco Palenque. I am Mike Finger, joined by our Express News panel of beat writers Jeff McDonald and Tom Orsborn, who are getting ready. We're in the midst of it. It started already. The most momentous, grandest, most brilliant, just unbelievable comeback story in the history of the NBA, nay, professional sports in the Western Hemisphere. Never seen anything like this. Tom's checking in from Houston this morning, and he's. I hope he had a big breakfast. I hope he's steeling himself because we're going to be working till June. The local cagers have turned it around. Tom, are you ready for this?
Well, no matter what happens the rest of the way, Mike, they'll always have those wins over Indiana and Oklahoma City and Indiana, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, not
that was
not,
just the start of something, Tom. Don't say they'll always have those two. That's the start of a turnaround.
It could be, Mike. It could be. But no, those were, yeah, I mean, in every way, shape, and form, those were fun games for the team, for the fans, you know, and it's a glimpse of what could be. And yeah, if they, you know, there's a chance they could finish the season like this. I mean, not win after win after win, but
there you go.
They're playing.
There you go.
They're playing better. They're not doing some of the thing. You know, they're not. They were able to turn back those comeback bids, those rally bids, in a way we haven't seen this year. And that, you know, Pop said it over and over again after the Indiana game. It's composure. And that's something that hasn't been associated with this team in quite some time. So, yeah, it's just a feel-good moment of the season for these guys.
Wet blanket? Do I get to be the wet blanket yet? Or do you want to keep
Well, what I was going to say is something else that we hadn't seen before. So many of these feel-good moments have taken place when the downer of this podcast has not been present. Like the two Phoenix victories. Jeff wasn't there. Jeff was taking a well-deserved day off after covering the bulk of the rodeo road trip against Oklahoma City. And of course, the local Cagers stepped up and played one of their best games of the year without him. But with Jeff in the building on Sunday, they did it against Indiana. So they had turned that corner, too.
You got to think that the Spurs analytics department is taking note of this.
Yes.
You got to think.
This is a true story, and Tom Orsborn can vouch for this. Before tip-off in Indiana, against Indiana the other night, one of the first things I mentioned to Mr. Tom was, you know, I haven't actually covered a Spurs win since January the 26th.
There you go.
All the other ones have come. Minnesota, Oklahoma City, and then the road game at Toronto were the three wins in between there. And Tom had covered them all alone without me. So
not
yes.
Alone. I was there for those.
Well, but you don't count for any reason.
I mean, that's true. I admit it.
Anyhow, so yes, it was a breakthrough for me. I think they can win. They can win for me. I was surprised and pleased that they could break through for me.
But I was interrupting you, putting a wet blanket on all this. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they were two great wins, and probably, I mean, you know, in the running for the best wins of the year, although that's just, you know, there's a small handful of those. But I thought the Indiana game was the Oklahoma City game at the time. You would have said it's their best win of the year just because there was the Western Conference leading Thunder and they just beat the dog out of them towards down the stretch. And then the Indiana game, maybe you have it has a you could argue that was the best win of the year just because of how it unfolded. They nearly gave away the lead. The Pacers actually went ahead in the second half. And instead of doing what they normally do and just sort of shrink away and end up losing, you know, they fought back and won that game kind of going away too. But I will point out they're like a week away from just getting blasted by Utah. just blasted. And you know, the rodeo road trip in Minnesota, yes, it was against a very good team, the Timberwolves, but just getting blasted. So I would just caution everyone, and we all know this, and everyone listening to this knows this, progress is not linear. There's going to be some slippage. They might go into Houston tonight, especially if the big fella doesn't play, and you know, have a little backslide. But we can celebrate the two victories they had. They came in and they showed signs of progress in them, and it'll be interesting to see how much of that holds. And I think it is fair to say they are playing better, you know, in March than they were in, let's say, you know, December or November. Like, you definitely see things.
They beat Kevin Durant and the Suns back-to-back nights in October, November.
Yeah.
This has been a consistently excellent team.
Well, yeah. But even including those, the Oklahoma City and Indiana were the first time they've won two games in a row against teams with winning records. Because The Phoenix Suns did not have a winning record the second time they beat them back in October, November. So all I'm saying is, yeah, you can see signs of progress, but let's not go planning any river parades just yet.
So we might not be working in June?
I mean, you will be.
But that's true. What were the, just to review, since we've reviewed so many lowlights for this team this season, what you mentioned, you and Tom both talked about the ability to sort of respond to the inevitable run the other team makes in the second half. That was a big step forward for this team in those two victories against Oklahoma City and Indiana. Anything else that stood out that, you know, on the basketball court that the Spurs did that they have not done as well earlier in the year?
I mean, we've given this guy his flowers all year, but like, Victor's hit a completely different level, which is crazy. Like, he's figured a lot of things out in terms of aggressiveness, assertiveness, when to take over. I mean, there was a driving dunk he had on somebody early in the Pacers game that I think that's maybe a layup attempt or a hook shot attempt earlier in the season, and he just flushed it on some dude. So, and there's been a lot of moments like that defensively. I mean, he's been good all year, so it's crazy to say he's hit another level, but he has. I mean, it's five blocks a night now. Like, it's almost it's five blocks almost every night, and I don't know why teams are even bothering anymore. Like, it's become inevitable. If anybody's shorter than 7'1", and they have to be shorter than 7'1", because you got Chet Holmgren too, or you have to be taller than 7'1" to challenge him. Like, anyone shorter than 7'1", I don't know why you're even trying. It's just not going to work out for you.
You know, Pop has said over and over this season, you know, to try to take some of the pressure off Victor, no doubt, that he doesn't know who he's guarding. You know, he's not familiar with these guys, and on and on. Victor, after the Pacers game, he said in French to our French colleagues that, no. He's seen enough already. He knows the league pretty well. He's got a mental book on these guys. And, you know, that's kind of looks that way. You know, it's not like he's lost out there in any way, shape or form. I mean, and especially defensively, it's going to be interesting to see with the back-to-back games against Golden State coming up. He's faced them. He faced them in the preseason. He faced them twice already in the regular season. So it's going to be interesting to see what he does against those guys.
That was what was interesting against the Pacers in that regard, is that was only the second time he's seen them. And the first time was, you know, November, was eons ago. So whatever book he had probably needed updated. And maybe it works the other way too. Like, maybe the Pacers just didn't realize, you know, you just don't realize till you're on the floor with that guy what you can and can't get away with. And like, unless you were TJ McConnell, you weren't getting away with much against the Spurs the other night. I mean, Victor was all over the place.
Well, the Pacers probably saw Victor at his worst the first time. Like, I think that was probably one of his, maybe the worst all-around game that he's played in the NBA, was that game up in Indiana. That it was very early in the season. So now they know.
Now they know. And I talked to Zach Collins about this on the road trip. This is even before the wins, about how, like, why are teams, like, are you surprised that teams are still teams or players, I don't know that it, maybe it's not a team's game plan to challenge Victor, but players are still challenging him and don't seem to get the memo that you really can't, you really got to be careful in the paint when he's anywhere near it. And Zach said, yeah, we see that on the bench all the time. We just start laughing as soon as it happens. Like, we're like, you know, you guys got to learn. And he said, and he did say, it seems to be teams that haven't seen him in a while or haven't seen him at all. That just come in with no idea, not realizing exactly how alien-like he is. And
well, just think about
adjust everything you do.
Just think about the mindset of a professional athlete, not just a professional athlete, but a professional athlete in the top 1% of 1% of 1%.
Yeah, you don't back down from
anybody. Players of basketball players in the world, and you've played hundreds, nay, thousands of games in your life, where you make a certain move. You have a certain aggression, and you don't care who is there. You can't just all of a sudden, because you're playing the worst team in the Western Conference, by the way, which the Spurs still are record-wise, say, I'm not going to do what I've done my entire life, thousands, thousands, thousands of times because of this rookie. No matter what the scouting report says, I sort of get it. And yeah. it's going to take them, those players, sort of repetitions and multiple exposures to this kid to see what does and doesn't work. I totally understand why they don't just back off. And it's weird. It's weird. This doesn't happen very often.
And to act like no one's ever gotten a layup in with Victor around is
probably, right.
It's disingenuous, a little hyperbole. Like, it does happen, but you got to have some kind of funk in your game to do it. There's got to be some kind of misdirection or some kind of something.
And TJ McConnell had a lot of funk the other night.
Yeah, he was smart enough not to go to the rim, though. It's a lot of mid-range pull-ups.
Yeah.
Well, what I've noticed, and you guys can speak to this, but a lot of Victor's blocks are what I might term "oh crap" blocks, where a guy has started his move, realizes there's nowhere to go, says "oh crap," and tries to flip something because he's just stuck. I think of the Obi Toppin one
night,
where Jeff had mentioned on the terrible website, like, as I was reading Jeff's note about why the Pacers are continuing to do this and challenging Victor Wembanyama, I looked up and Obi Toppin had drove baseline and had nowhere to go, had his sort of "oh crap" moment, reached out with his shooting hand to try to flip something up, and Victor just sort of calmly says, "Nope, that's not going to work." I think a lot of them are panic plays by the opponents that Victor just swats away.
Which blocks do we think are the most impressive? The ones where he just basically spikes it off the backboard, or the ones where he just kind of gently catches it? You know what I mean? Like the ones that Sean Elliott calls the dad blocks.
Yeah. The dad blocks is great too. Got a shout out to Sean for that terminology.
Like, one both of those are pretty great.
One against Chet Holmgren the other night. Just took it away from him.
And that guy is 7'1" and a really great basketball player.
Yeah.
And he made it look like it was his child. One of my favorite low key Victor moments from the rodeo trip was in Utah after he had the near 5x5 game, then the 5x5 game. So you're kind of counting blocks and steals to see if he can do it again. And like 25 seconds into the game, he pokes the ball away from John Collins, and I'm like, oh well, there's steal number one. Except for Collins recovered it. Okay, he doesn't get steal number one. Takes two dribbles past Victor. And then Victor just slaps it off the backboard. I was like, okay, there's block number one then. Like, whatever. Like it's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. But it's like he made two amazing defensive plays in one in that game. He does stuff like that all the time. And, I mean, we can talk later. You got anything else to add to this?
Well, not on that topic, but you and Tom both were talking earlier about how much he has picked up and the knowledge that he has picked up. And that's true. But I was talking to somebody the other day who's been watching him pretty closely, knows a little bit about basketball, and just pointed out, like, there
was it, was it Greg Popovich?
Yeah. Well, I can't reveal that it was Greg Popovich on the podcast, but he still doesn't know what he doesn't know. And like Tom mentioned, he said in French that he knows all this stuff now, but there's going to come a point when he figures out how to get fouled. This is the observation that was made to me. And the games are going to start to get really boring because once he figures that out, once he figures out just the little nuances, this was mentioned during the Oklahoma City game when there was a play early on when Chet Holmgren pulled out a veteran move. And Chet Holmgren is a rookie like Victor is, but Chet spent a year watching film in an NBA locker room, in an NBA atmosphere, just picking up nuances of the game. And he, Chet sort of did a Tim Duncan type swim move, got the foul, and there was nothing that anybody could do about it. Victor still doesn't have that yet because he's not thinking that way. And right. like, that's no fun. But once he figures out just little stuff like that, like tendencies of defenders, when they have their arms out, that those are just two free throws. Like, in a way, the games are going to get boring because he can get whatever he wants. And I still think, even though he thinks that he knows a lot, there's stuff that he can pick up that are going to add dimensions to his game, probably on both ends of the court. And it's still like we've been gushing about this kid for 19 minutes or however long this podcast is now. And there's still, I mean, he's still a rookie that doesn't know what he doesn't know. And I think that makes what he's doing even more impressive.
And it's funny you mentioned Tim and that swim move, because I have this vivid memory about Kawhi's second or third year, Tim saying exactly what you just said. Like, he's going to learn when people get their hands out of place, you can attack those hands and get fouls. And that's what we've been talking to him about. And Kawhi was great. And Victor, I think, is the same way. You give him a little bit of information in the computer, and then you see it on the floor almost immediately. Like, he's able to process. Kawhi was able to process that stuff really quickly. And I think that year his free throw attempts skyrocketed. And I think, and even Pop has mentioned this with Victor, like, you give him something you see, or a little tip or some advice, and it's automatically incorporated into his game. So I think that's something that could come pretty quickly. I got something I want to talk about. I don't know, Mike Finger, you're gonna get bored if you want to go take a lap or make a coffee or.
Okay.
I know you hate the awards discussion.
All right, I'm gonna go get some coffee. You and Tom do this.
We don't even need to talk about the Rookie of the Year. That one's over. Uh-huh. But like, is Victor the Defensive Player of the Year? Is he all NBA? Is he all defensive team? Like, where does he stand on those sort of charts?
Well, Rudy Gobert, I mean, in Minnesota, with the way they're playing, he may be the front runner there.
I think he's the front runner. Yeah. I think he'd be the front runner, but, and I get that argument. But man, it's hard to watch Victor play and see that he's not going to get votes. If you look at the Vegas odds, the odds are for Victor for Rudy, but number two in the whole entire NBA is Victor Wembanyama.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I declined to take part in the. In the voting, I for awards, it's just part of my deal. But so Jeff, maybe you can
the best defense. Go ahead. You got a question?
Well, I someone brought this up the other day, and I barely paid attention because it's awards, and I do not care. But is the all defensive team positionless this year, or are you still limited to one big man?
I believe it's going to be positionless this year. I think this is the year they switched to that. As far as
you could vote for Gobert and Victor Wembanyama on your first team all defense. Will that be allowed?
Yes, that is true. And if you're talking just the all defense, there are two teams. And in the old days, it was guard, forward, center. Mm-hmm. And that would if it had still been that format, it would be really interesting to see what happens with that center position, because Gobert will get votes, Anthony Davis will get votes, Brook Lopez will probably get votes, Victor Wembanyama will get votes. So if you're only limited to two centers, then I don't know which two of those four get on the team. But now that it's positionless, I think it increases Victor's odds of landing on one of those teams somewhere.
And you could have two on the first team and two on the second team.
Right. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that would make him the first rookie to get all defensive nod since Tim Duncan.
Uh-huh.
I'm not mistaken. As far as the whole defensive player of the year debate goes, I think voting for the best defender on the best defensive team, that's it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
And I think I think Gobert probably is a front runner for that reason. Like, I think the only argument against Victor is, but their defense is sort of mediocre. It's not the worst in the world anymore. It was for a while. But, you know, how can the defensive player of the year be on a team that's got a bottom half of the league defense? And I understand that argument, too. I think if you look at the on-off splits, the reason the Spurs don't have a top five defense is because Victor can't play 48 minutes. But if he could play 48 minutes at the same, you know, effort level that he plays all the other minutes he's on the floor, they'd have a top five defense. I mean, that's statistically correct. They have one of the worst defenses in all history when he's off the floor, and they have one of the best defenses in the NBA when he's on the floor. That plus all the blocks and all the steals, I could put together an argument to vote for him. I'm not saying I will right now. I got time to figure it out. But I think there's a definite argument to me that'd be made there for Victor. Not taking anything away from Gobert. Like I said, he's probably the front runner. And if I had to vote right now, it's probably who I'd vote for, just because I made the case for Victor, but it's still hard. It's still hard not to look at, you know, reward good teams, good players on good teams for those awards. I think it's the same for all NBA. I think
is all NBA positionless.
I believe that is also positionless as well.
That might actually work against Victor.
Him. Yes. There were so many.
Because if you had to vote for three centers for all NBA, he might be the third one.
There were so many years back in the day where, like, that third center was so hard to figure out. And just like, I guess DeAndre Jordan. So it is kind of weird back in the day. If you look at some of those teams, I guarantee you, like, DeAndre Jordan's all NBA, but Damian Lillard isn't.
Right.
Like, doesn't make sense because of the positions. But.
And this year, Embiid wouldn't be eligible.
That's true.
You'd have Jokic as your first center, maybe like Anthony Davis, and then like an open spot for the third spot that Victor's would seem to be a shoe-in for.
Yep.
Now you can put in all those guards and forwards that were all stars basically ahead of Victor.
You're basically, when you take the positions out, you're like, who are the best 15 players in the NBA right now?
Yeah.
And is Victor on that list? Maybe. But
he probably is, but there are voters who aren't willing to give that to him yet.
Yep. And, you know,
understandably.
With the rookie of the year, my argument all along between him and Chet is you can't really look at record. That's not really how you judge a rookie of the year. But with all NBA, I think it does factor in. It has to, and it will, and it should. Like, you want, if you're so good, your team should be better. I mean, that maybe that seems harsh, but that's kind of the mentality of the voters, and I don't have a problem with that. I think we're a year away from all that being moot, though, and Victor's going to be on all that stuff next year.
Yeah.
So, okay, that's all I want to talk about. You can get back to your regularly scheduled program.
No, that was nice. Tom, what do you want to talk about?
Is there anyone else on this team?
Okay. The last two games, yes, there has been. And so I think that's the reason those two, that they beat Oklahoma City and Indiana. It's like enough other guys showed up. There's so many fans that just want it to be 1-on-5. You know, Victor versus 5. Like, they get mad when other people take shots. Or they get, oh, it's been 4 possessions and Victor hadn't got a shot. Or, oh, they missed him on this pass. You know, and they're just, like, everything needs to run through Victor. And I get it. But you're never going to win anything that way. Like, you need everybody to be involved. Yes, Victor should be the focal point. Yes, he should have the highest usage. And by the way, since January 1st, he's basically got the highest usage in the entire NBA. Like, he's right up there. He's more than SGA. I mean, so they're using him, but other guys have to get involved. And we saw that against Indiana, Oklahoma City. What happens when Devin Vassell is chipping in points and Malachi Branham's having his moments? And your boy Jeremy Sochan is you know, scoring in double figures and doing his defensive thing. Like, when everybody's involved, they're actually a pretty good basketball team.
Yeah, Oklahoma City, you know, I thought it was Devin's, you know, maybe his best game as a Spur. I know he's had 30-point games, but 28 points, shooting at a high percentage, 9 assists, 1 turnover. Jeremy in that game was outstanding in the fourth quarter, 10 or 11 points. You know, kind of triggered their or set the tone for their fourth quarter performance early.
He guarded SGA.
Yes. And then against Indiana, he also had a pretty darn solid game, guarded 3 different guys, including the aforementioned unstoppable McConnell there at the end.
I mean, they don't may not win that game if Sohan doesn't turn into McConnell stopper.
Like
I mean, it's a joke, but maybe not. Like maybe it's not a joke.
Like Keldon said, that's why Pop's the greatest coach of all time.
He made the move. Let's talk about Devin and his shooting. Like there are people that get mad every time he takes a shot. You know, like they want to nitpick everything that dude does, and he's doing what Pop wants him to do. Like from the beginning of the season, Pop told the quote I remember going way back to when we were in Los Angeles in October or whenever that was, first road trip. Yeah. Pop said, we're telling Devin, we need you to be selfish and looking for your own shot. We want you to be selfish. And at that point, they would rather him take some bad shots than pass up good ones. And hopefully over time, learn the difference between the two. And it's still the same. Like they will get on his rear end if he's passing up shots. So when you're Devin and you've heard this drilled into you, of course you're going to take shots. They want you to. But every time he takes a shot and it's a tough shot, or there he does take some shots that are, yeah, I wouldn't have taken that one maybe in retrospect. But every time he does that, there's a certain segment of people that are like, see, just pass the ball to Victor. And it's like, that's not how this works. Like, in order for them to be the team that they're going to be, they need Devin to be really good. And there's a learning curve there. And part of the learning curve is there's going to be some mistakes. There's going to be some mistakes. And hopefully over time, those mistakes lessen. And I think if you look at Devin Vassell's game from October, November to today, I think you've seen some improvement in those areas.
I will use this as a chance to segue into one last thing I wanted to get the panel's thoughts on. I'm eager for your thoughts. And shoot around was canceled this morning, so Tom can stay in his top secret location a little longer. We can run over if we have to.
Well, you could ask him. He might have other plans. Shoot, like he finally gets the morning off. He might want to go walk around downtown Houston.
Gotta write a story.
He might want to drive out to San Jacinto and visit the monuments. You don't know.
He might do that. Oklahoma City was in a similar just bottoming out era 3 years ago in 2021. The Thunder were a young team. They weren't winning. I think they finished with 21 or 22 victories that year. Nowhere to go but up. 3 years later, they're the best, if not the best team in the West, one of the top two legitimate finals contender. It's only been 3 years. Do you know how many players on that 2021 team remain with the Thunder 3 years later?
I assume you looked this up, but it's SGA and Lou Dortz and who?
There's three of them.
There's another one?
The Kenrich Williams.
Oh, okay.
Not necessarily all, like Lou Dort and Kenrich Williams aren't even guys you would consider to be close to stars on that team. Like they play, but
Dort's a starter, you know.
The point is, like, there's lots of turnover, and to make that step, you need, like, not everyone's going to stick around, and all these guys who are learning, and this is a learning season for your local Cagers, like some of these lessons aren't going to be carried in by these players into the contention era. Part of what you're doing in a season like the Thunder had 3 years ago and the Spurs are having now is just identifying who's going to stick around. And while I believe there will be, like, if the over-under is three on who's going to be around in 2027 for your Spurs, I bet it'll be more than three who are on this team now. But I don't think – I'm not sure it'll be more than four or five. So
are you including – I guess you're including Vic as one of them.
Yeah.
So Vic plus two, Vic plus three, Vic plus –
Vic plus two, Vic plus three. So kind of like it's just a just the point of the exercise is just to kind of remind, first of all, myself, second of all, my fellow panelists, and third of all, the listeners out there who we love and appreciate all around the world, that part of what you're doing in a season like this is giving people chances to thrive, giving people chances to learn, knowing that you're not going to keep all of them, and it's a valuation, and we've talked about this before. But finding out who fits, giving, like, for example, giving Devin Vassell, as you just mentioned, a chance to take a whole bunch of shots, do a whole bunch of things just to see how he does. You know, he's got a long contract. Keldon Johnson's got a long contract. Jeremy Sochan probably is a considered a key part of this franchise's future. Then you go down the list of like your Malachi Branhams and Blake Wesley's and Trey Jones and on down the line, like that Zach Collins, all these guys probably have a chance to be here in 3 years, but you're not going to keep them all. And I don't know. I just feel like that's important to remember that with the number of picks this team, first of all, the ability to use that draft capital on trades, like this team is not going to be this team forever. And part of what you're doing in a season like this is just figuring out which three or four of those guys are going to stay with Victor. And I will use that as a chance to ask you guys, like, if you're placing a bet on who on this team with Victor Wembanyama, who are your top three in terms of will be in the rotation, will be around in 2026, 2027?
Well, number one, I just want to say, like 200 some odd episodes in this podcast, you finally made a cogent point. So congratulations.
Uh-huh.
And the top three is hard. I think Devin and Sochan I think they're pretty solidly in that top three somewhere. I mean, you mean in addition to Victor, yes? Or
yes.
Okay, and the third one, I don't know. The third one,
I'm going to throw Trey in there as the third one. They really like him. He would be a very good backup on a good team.
The other factor to consider in this exercise is it's not necessarily the three best guys because one of those guys who you mentioned might be somebody that you use to acquire a superstar.
True.
You know what I mean? So it's a complicated thought exercise. True. Because you're not just saying who's going to be the best, who are going to be the best three guys along with Victor in 2027. Right. You might need, if you're going to trade for somebody who the disgruntled star of the year, whoever that might be, it could be anybody. The NBA changes so much from year to year. Like that team might say, hey, we really like Devin Vassell. And if you want to upgrade to an all NBA disgruntled player, whoever that is, like throw Devin Vassell into the deal. So it's not an easy question to ponder because there's all kinds of layers to it. But anything y'all want to add to that?
Just my brain's too primitive to come up with that complicated a thought.
If you take that calculation out of it, then you know that's a good starting point. Just you know, without what you just said, Mike, factoring that in, I'd go with Devin, Jeremy, and Trey Jones.
And I think they like Devin. I mean, not Jeremy. For defensive purposes, especially, like he's the guy you can slap on a TJ McConnell when he gets hot.
I don't know why people. To me, on a really good team, he's going to be really good. I don't know if that makes sense, but
it does. It makes perfect sense.
Like, and he's going to get better.
He probably shouldn't be your third best player, but if he's your sixth or he's your, like a Bruce Bowen type with a different kind of skill set, I think that's perfect.
He's becoming very good at that role, that defensive, I'll guard anybody and I'll irritate the hell out of him too. I mean,
Jeff correctly pointed out my dearth of cogent points over the years. But when I was pitching for him to be drafted that summer, we were talking about the Spurs draft pick and that's one I called out where that could be a guy they could target. I think that it was that early that I had mentioned the comparison that somebody had made of him to Draymond Green. And the more and more he plays, the more accurate that seems.
Exactly.
in every sense.
Can't shoot.
Yeah. And annoys the hell out of opponents but does sort of playmaker type of stuff on offense, even if he's not lighting up the point totals, can score, can facilitate, can defend.
I think a little more consistency game to game would be better. And again, he's 20 uh-huh. years old. So it's a question is he just 20 and as he matures, will that come? Like that's the question.
Yeah. Well, I thought that would be fun to think about. We've gone a little over. Tom has a story to write, sights to see, locals to talk to. I know he likes meeting the area personalities after he ventures out from his top secret location in these other cities. I'm sure he'll have tales to tell when we see you next week on another edition of the Spurs Insider, chronicling what could be the greatest comeback story in NBA history. Until we see you next time, take care of each other and keep it real.